to the Process Podcast, an interview series exploring the process of survival as a creative. Typically, we talk to folks from all sorts of backgrounds and industries about money, mental health, relationships, the creative process itself, and more. For this season, we're trying something a little bit new and experimenting with theme seasons. And for this one, we're focusing on music, bands, artists, and industry folks. Big thanks to Desert Days Music Fest for helping make a lot of these interviews happen. Visit desertdays.org to check them out and to grab your tickets for the fest in the fall of this year. Also, thank you to Ton Starts Bandit for providing their song Wet Ass Morning as our intro and outro music, and to Hannah Spencer for doing all of our branding and design work. Hope you dig it. Hello from San Francisco. I am getting to the point where I'm only a week ahead with these episodes, so hopefully I can keep up this whole weekly thing. This happens every season. If you've been listening for a while, you know that after like 10 episodes, although I think it's only been 4 or 5, they start to become a little bit more sporadic. I'm gonna try my best to not let that happen. Also, something funky is going on with my voice today. I went for a run earlier and it was like windy out, and ever since I've been weird in coffee. Coffee as in caffeine. I don't know. Anyway, for today's episode, I spoke with Chris Shaw of X-Cult and Gogs and a new punk band, Richard Rose. If you're not familiar with X-Cult, really rad punk band, originated in Memphis, Tennessee. Now, Chris is based in LA. The other band members are in Memphis. We talk about that quite a bit. We also cover what has happened to punk culture over the years and how that word doesn't mean very much these days, how they've sustained as a punk band, and mostly just like how he really truly writes his own roles in order to be creatively satisfied, or like to see out his creative vision, largely with music and writing, but just in general, like how he's kind of designed the life that works for him and that's true to his values and what he wants. That includes like how to know who to work with, especially when it comes to labels, and how his relationship with In the Red Records came to be and how surreal that was for him, and when to like think about how to self-release or maybe even start a label. And yeah, a bunch more. I won't continue on listing these things, and you can just listen. This episode is brought to you in partnership with Desert Days Music Festival, which we also talk about in this episode quite a bit, how rad it is. They just, I believe, announced another round of the lineup for this year in October over in Marina Beach, California, in the desert. So yeah, go to desertdays.org. That's DAZE.org to check it out and grab some tickets. Sweet. As always, you can find the show notes and links to Chris's music, X-Cult's music, Gog's music, Richard Rose's single on In the Red Records, as well as In the Red, and whatever else we talked about over at theprocess.co. Big thanks to Chris for his time and sharing his insights with us. Hope you dig it. See you next week.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's going pretty well. How are you?
I'm good.
Are you, you're in Hawaii, yeah?
Yeah, it's actually been raining here a lot this morning, but yeah, I'm here for a few more days.
Nice. What island are you on?
Kauai.
I've heard that it's beautiful, obviously.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's just, it rains a whole lot, but it hasn't rained at all this trip. It started raining last night. It looks like it's not going to stop anytime soon.
What brings you there? Vacation or hanging out?
Yeah, we have a vacation home here. So I come here like every couple of months.
Nice. That has to be pretty rad. Are you still based in Memphis?
No, I moved to Los Angeles a year and a half ago. And from L.A., it's only like a 5-hour flight out here. But yeah, I've been living in L.A. since January of 2017.
How's that transition been?
It's been great. I started coming out to L.A. more often, like probably three years ago, recording and like playing with another band that I have that's members are based in L.A. And so I was coming out here more often and then made the decision to just make the move. There's a whole lot more going on with what I was trying to do with music and stuff in L.A. than in Memphis.
Yeah, I'd imagine there's a bit more of a, I'm not sure how you classify X-Cult, but punk / psychedelia type of music scene in L.A. than Memphis. Is that true?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
So are the rest of your X-Cult members Are they in LA or are they spread around?
No, they are all still in Memphis. They all have various like things keeping them there, and I think that they're all really happy there. So I don't expect anybody to move anytime soon. But maybe, I don't know. You never know with those dudes. But as of right now, I'm the only one outside of Memphis.
How do you manage that logistically in terms of recording and touring and practicing?
It's a little bit challenging, but luckily we have like a pretty strong blueprint for the band in place. I think if we were a newer band and I had moved away, it might not have worked. But we kind of already like have the whole like record label and booking and that type of thing already in place. So really the hardest thing is just making sure everyone's schedule is aligned. But I mean, that was difficult when I lived in Memphis too. So really just making sure everyone's schedule is aligned. And then before a tour or something, we book a practice rehearsal space somewhere. Like I think when we did the European tour last summer, we did like a month long tour in Europe, and we had to rent a practice space in like Bordeaux, France for a couple of days ahead of our tour. And that's kind of, but that kind of makes it more fun in a way too. It's like you get to experience what it's like to rent a rehearsal space in a foreign country. But we done that, and then you know, like when before the we did like a run of West Coast shows in March, and before we did that just rented a couple rehearsal spaces like that again. So I mean it presents like a little bit more of a challenge, but it's also kind of fun in a way. And I think it's fun for those dudes. Like Memphis is really shitty in the wintertime. It's super cold, but it doesn't snow. It's just kind of like, it's miserable. And that's normally when X-Cult has recorded. So I think that they like the idea of maybe getting out of Memphis and coming to LA for a few weeks to get out of the wintertime of Memphis. It is like a little bit more tricky. And when we first started X-Cult, we practiced twice a week for years, which was really beneficial to the band, you know, like, especially as we were starting out. Obviously, we don't practice twice a week anymore, but it still works out. It's just a little bit more tricky.
I'd imagine I'm sure you feel as though you've all evolved enough to be able to do that, obviously.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to, like, it wouldn't work if people didn't care about the band, but I mean, everyone's still stoked on it, so it's like, make it work, you know?
Yeah. So is music your sole career?
No, I've had a few different jobs. I worked at a newspaper for 5 years or maybe even 6 years. And then I've been doing, I do PR for bands behind the scenes and work for a record label in Los Angeles. And then I also like, you know, do all kinds of other weird stuff for money here and there, like most creative people do.
Yeah, totally.
That's something that I found I could do a lot easier after I moved to LA. I mean, there just wasn't opportunities for a lot of the stuff that I'm interested in doing in terms of work in a place like Memphis, but LA has been good to me, finding odd jobs, shit like that.
Do those allow for a flexible schedule too, or do you have to like be in an office at certain times and stuff?
No, I don't have an office job, and I don't think I could. I did for a long time. The whole time I worked at a newspaper, I guess you could consider that a 9-to-5, but I'm definitely like someone who needs the freedom to create their own schedule, and I guess I'm my own boss. I definitely have to have jobs that allow me to do what I want to do creatively, because that's the most important thing. Having a good job where I make a lot of money has never been really that important to me.
Right. So do those working in music, PR, and for a label and stuff, does that inform your work with X-Cult, or is it kind of one of those things? Like, for example, I market and promote and write for a living. I'm a like freelancer. But when it comes to promoting my own projects, I want nothing to do with it. Like, it's the very last thing that I want to do. Do you feel that way at all, or do you still get jazzed about promoting X-Cult and getting the word out there?
Yeah, I still get stoked about it. And I think that, like, a lot of times when you wear, like, a few different hats in the music scene, I feel like they all kind of blend together, especially in a smaller music scene. In a place like L.A., everyone's jobs are kind of, like, built in to the point where you don't have to be your number one promoter, you know, like other people will promote and kind of take the initiative, so you don't have to wear all the hats for your band, which is a good thing about living in a place where there's a real music scene. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've always kind of been like the de facto manager / promoter of X-Cult, so I kind of have to be doing that all the time, whether I want to be or not, because we've never like had anybody else doing it for us. I don't know. I think they those lines get blurred a lot of times too between publicist, manager, promoter when it comes to X-Cult, because I kind of just do it all.
And you've been creating music as X-Cult for like 6 years, right?
Yeah, I guess like probably, I think we started the band in 2010 and then like maybe the winter of 2010 was when we first started, I think. So almost 8 years now, which is crazy to think about. A lot of punk bands don't ever last that long.
Wow, yeah, congrats.
yeah, thank you.
I definitely want to hear a bit about how everything has evolved, but I'm glad you brought up the word punk, because I feel like, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like there aren't all that many bands that remind me of like old school traditional punk in a way, both like melodically and in terms of lyrics, like X-Cult does.
Yeah.
Would you say that's true? And also, like, what do you feel it means to quote unquote be punk in 2018?
I don't know. I mean, that's like, as far as like that being the type of music that we create, that's pretty much all I've ever done musically. So I think it is kind of funny when people are surprised that like a punk band will be playing Desert Days or that a punk band is like existing the way that we do in 2018, because it's kind of like the only thing that I've ever known in terms of playing music. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think these nowadays that term gets used so much and so incorrectly that I don't even really know if it means much anymore, you know? It's like so overused and so cliche, and I feel like so many times it gets like, you know, there's just like everyone has their own interpretation of what it means. I guess to me it would just, it's in 2018 in terms of writing music, it would just mean there's no rules. Every single punk trope and subculture has been exploited to the max nowadays in everything from fashion to mainstream artists trying to capitalize on it or take advantage of it or just like appropriate things from punk culture. At this point, I'm not even really sure what it means anymore. I think you could ask 100 different people and get 100 different answers. I think when X-Cult plays a show or when someone hears X-Cult on the radio or on a streaming service, they know that it's punk. And that's cool to me, you know, but then again, someone's reasoning for why they think X-Cult is a punk band might be completely different than mine. So I think it's a weird topic, especially in the age of social media and instant gratification. I think like the word is overused, and I think the whole music term in itself is like oversaturated and just like played out.
Like,
that being said, I would still consider us a punk band. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I'd imagine you probably maybe have some frustrating conversations when you are telling someone new that you're a punk band. Everyone just has such a different definition of that these days.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, you know, that's not, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it's kind of like, I don't know, music is so subjective anyway, you know, because what one person hears is so different from what another person hears. So I kind of like hearing weird descriptions or like interpretations of what X-Cult is to other people, because it's obviously one thing to me. But the longer that we've done this band, the more people that have talked about it or written about it, it's just kind of interesting to see what they take away from it. Because sometimes it's way far off from what I think, and then other times I'm like, oh yeah, I can kind of see that.
Do you have any specific examples that come to mind?
Oh man, I think I've heard like everything. I think when we first started, someone said that we sounded like the Velvet Underground. And I was just like, that's not what, I don't think that's accurate.
No.
People say we sound like Crass too, which I'm like, that's not, I don't know. But then there's also people who don't know anything about punk or like where punk evolved from, and they'll just be like, oh, this sounds like the Sex Pistols. And well, they might not be completely wrong. It's like, yeah, you could, I don't know, you could argue that we sound like a lot of different bands besides Sex Pistols. So it's open to interpretation, I guess. I guess that's better than people not talking about your band at all, you know.
That's a great point. What are some of the bands you would either compare X-Cult to or find it inspiration from?
I'm super inspired by Marquis Smith and The Fall. I wish that we could be as prolific as The Fall and release as many albums. But that's somebody that I think, like, as a singer and a lyricist, never compromised, never changed what he wanted to do. When people were writing about his band sounding one way or sounding the other, never really, like, gave a shit about, like, keeping up with appearances either in terms of, like, how many members came and went from that band. I think The Fall is a pretty, like, anti-rock and roll establishment band, but also extremely popular, obviously. a band that did things completely on their own terms and still were incredibly successful. I think that's what anybody would hope to achieve with their music. You know, it's pretty rad. I also think bands, even though we haven't done it, bands that put out their own albums have always been cool to me, whether it's like Black Flag, SST, or like the Misfits with Plan 9. Like, I think, you know, even Spitz, like, used to put out all their own records. I don't know. I think that shit's cool, too. The longer that I do this, the more I think at some point it would be cool just if, like, X-Call had their own record label. But I also really enjoy working with the label that were on In the Red. So definitely not because of them that I feel like that. I just think that eventually that could be cool. Or even if I never do it, you know, you could still be inspired by shit like that. That whole, like, DIY attitude. And a lot of bands, I feel like, are starting to do that. I think with the internet and social media and shit, you really don't need a record label in the traditional sense anymore. A lot of people are realizing that they can self-release shit and have just as strong of an impact, and that's cool. I think anything that questions the normal laid out methods of how you're supposed to do things in a band, that's the kind of stuff that I like. I don't like the normal paint by numbers approach to how people are supposed to play music or exist as a band or a group. I think that gets old and boring.
In what ways would you say you're maintaining a certain level of authenticity and also doing things a bit differently?
Well, I guess me living across the country is different in terms of a traditional band setting. But, I mean, X-Call has always been true to ourselves and true to, like, the music that we wanted to create. I don't think we've ever done anything that we didn't want to do. And I think that people could maybe view that on the surface as, like, having held us back to some degree, but I don't really look at it like that. I mean, we waited a long time to go to Europe when a lot of times nowadays bands will go to Europe on their first tour, or on their first record, or on their first single or something. We waited a long time. And, you know, some of that was for financial reasons, but it was also because I wanted to make sure that it could be the best that it could be. You know, going to Europe and playing a month's worth of shows, I didn't just want that to be like another tour. I wanted that to be something extremely special for us and for the people that were coming out to the shows, and I really think that happened. I think, like, it was worth the wait, and it wasn't rushed, and that gave the people that like our band the best shows that they possibly could have seen. Also, just always working with, like, like-minded people in terms of releasing our records. I mean, In the Red is, like, a legendary punk and rock and roll label, and finding someone who is as like-minded as you are and likes all the same bands that you do and stuff like that is really important for a good working relationship. I feel like working with a label like In the Red has definitely kept X-Cult as authentic and real as possible. But I mean, yeah, and I think, you know, with a band like X-Cult, there's not going to be, like, you know, you're not going to see a band like us do something that would make you question the integrity or authenticity of the band. I don't think that's something that anybody that likes our band would have to worry about.
Yeah. I feel like you're almost playing a role in kind of preserving that punk rock culture a bit, at least among a certain niche. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, but I think at the same time, X-Cult is its own thing. I mean, coming from a place like Memphis, people had all these kind of, like, preconceived notions of how we should sound, or how, like, the Memphis sound or whatever. And I mean, really, the Memphis sound is, like, the Oblivions, the Retards, Tav Falco, stuff like that. All stuff that I like, but doesn't sound anything like X-Cult. I think that was cool, like, from the beginning of the band, you know. When we started, we were the first punk band since Jay Ricard that anyone cared about outside of Memphis. And it was cool for us to present something that wasn't the typical Memphis garage rock sound, because it was kind of like, yeah, there's stuff goes on here besides two guitar players and no bass. There's more to the Memphis music scene than home-recorded four-track garage rock songs. And I think that was rad, and that kind of opened up the door for X-Cult in terms of being able to do what we wanted to do. And not have to answer to the, you know, the local press or whatever, or the people who were immediately, like, comparing us to Jay Retard or the Oblivions.
In the Red, what did building that relationship look like?
I think originally Larry had asked us if we wanted to do a single, and I had said, yeah, we'd be obviously super down to do a single, but we'd also be interested in doing an LP, and then that was pretty much it. I think he had been interested in our band since the very beginning. But it just took a little bit for us to meet and work everything out. Me and the drummer of X-Cult were both kind of like nerding out a little bit when it happened, because him and I have both been buying In the Red albums since we were like teenagers, essentially. So I remember him, like, especially being really excited, because it was kind of like this weird thing where you're like, man, I was like influenced by this stuff like so much as a younger person and still in today and now on that label, which is cool. You know, like stuff like that doesn't happen always. And sometimes you meet people that you look up to and wish that you didn't meet them at all. So it was a good situation. And now, I mean, it's like one of those things where you still have to remind yourself every once in a while, like younger me would be stoked that we're here. We are like working on a new record for In the Red and having already released one and stuff like that. It's like, it's pretty cool, but it becomes normal. And so you do kind of have to remind yourself, like, this is pretty awesome. You know, not everyone gets a chance to do this. So
totally.
try to remember that.
What would you tell a young emerging musician who's trying to figure out that whole like DIY release versus find a label situation?
I mean, if there's a label that's interested, that makes it a lot easier. But also, I think that self-releasing something is rad. I mean, especially if you can figure out what you need to do to get like a 7-inch or your first LP out there and you can afford to do it. I mean, you get out on the road, chances are you'll probably make your money back and sell all the records. So, I mean, you know, it just depends also on what you want to do, what kind of exposure you want for yourself. But I mean, obviously if a label is interested and they make sense, then you should do it. You should never get on a label that makes you pay for anything though.
Yeah.
Because I've noticed that people do that, and it's not really like a record label if you're paying for some of the pressing of the record or some shit like that. It's like, don't do anything like that, I guess would be my only advice. The whole point of having a label is making them pay for stuff.
Right. Yeah. And handling some of that stuff so you don't have to, for sure. Cool. So taking kind of a step back, are you working on any new material now?
Yeah, X-Cult is working on a new record, and then some other projects that I'm in are one of the bands I'm in is working on new stuff. The other one is about to have an album drop this Friday.
Yeah, that's is it Gogs or Googs? How do you say it?
Gogs, yeah.
Gogs.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm always writing, and I try to stay busy with it. I mean, I feel like I try to stay as busy as possible because I don't know. I mean, it is kind of like a job at this point. But it's a fun job. I feel like I kind of have to stay busy. Otherwise, I find myself, like, getting hella bored. It's good for me to always have something coming up or always have a project in focus. I like to stay busy. I like to stay productive.
That's
so,
a good quality to have, considering the life that you're living. That makes sense. What does your writing process look like?
I mostly just write in notebooks, random pieces of paper. I don't really write much on the computer anymore. I just write all the time. From the stuff that I write, I kind of pick and choose what I think could be lyrics. And then from there, if I had something that I've written, like, that I've had for a long time, I might think about which band that it would work with. But most of the time, I kind of already have an idea. It's like if I'm writing a song or something, I kind of have an idea of what band it's going to go towards. But I don't know. I'm definitely a writer first and a musician second. So I just like to write. I've always liked to write. And I think once I found out that, you know, once I got into being a singer and a lyricist, it was like, oh, now I have a place for all these ideas to go to, you know, but the ideas were already there. So I've always been into writing. But yeah, I mean, that's normally the process.
Where do the ideas come from?
Oh, man. I don't really know. I mean, I guess like everywhere. Yeah, I mean, really anywhere and everywhere. Some of my favorite writers are my favorite because they can turn something mundane or trivial into something larger than life, you know, something like a casual, like everyday occurrence. A good writer can make relatable and, like, you know, poetic.
Interesting.
Stuff like that is interesting to me. And also, like, the, you know, like traveling. So all my favorite rock and roll bands and all my favorite rock singers, I feel like, have songs about traveling or have songs about the road, getting on the road, being on the road, what the road does to you. I've always liked that. I've always tried to write songs like that. At least, like, have a song, one song like that per album of whatever project I'm doing. You know, I think Motorhead has great songs about the road and just traveling. I think a lot of great rock songs have songs about traveling, or rock bands have songs about traveling. So that's something that I would definitely try to do. And also, I don't know, my, like, current surroundings, books I'm reading, movies, or shows that I've watched, records I've listened to, like anything, even, I don't know, people that you go out with or like surround yourself with, you know, like there'll be like a social interaction that I'll think on and turn into a song or turn into like an idea. But yeah, I mean, I feel like the more songs you write, the longer you do it, the more comfortable that you get with like exploring things that maybe you normally wouldn't write about or think about, or I don't know. And you also have to trust yourself, because with writing, it's really easy to be like, no matter what you write, you're like, man, that's like the dumbest shit I've ever read. Or like, that's like the corniest thing I've ever read. So it's kind of like, you get to the point where you trust yourself a little bit more, but that can be a bad thing to you, I guess.
How do you, when you get those ideas, like if you have some sort of social interaction, for example, and this would make for a great song or poem or whatever, do you like write it down right away, or do you marinate on it? How do you, or do you not even realize it was an idea till later?
I tend to write it down right away. I'll also like save shit in my phone, like my notes folder. And sometimes I'll look back at it and be like, "That, what the hell was that? That doesn't even make sense." But then other times I'll be like, oh, that's rad. Especially, so I come up with a lot of song titles that way, just immediately storing it in my phone. I also like keep like a notepad around. And a lot of times, like if I know that I'm working on an album or something, I'll keep the same notepad and just write whatever comes to mind in it. And then later, you know, like pick and choose lines from, like two lines will come from one page, then like 10 pages later, like the rest of the song will get pulled from something else I wrote. I feel like if anyone ever found one of those notebooks, if I left it at a club or something, they would know what the fuck was going on. But to me, it makes sense. There's a method in there somewhere.
Yeah, that works for you. When you were talking about the trust in yourself thing, I think you're probably really referencing like battling some self-doubt, it sounded like, which I think everyone does, no matter, you know, and everything. How have you learned to overcome that and just like move forward with things until they are the way that you want them to be?
In terms of trusting yourself, or what? Sorry, I think I don't think I heard what you're.
Yeah,
saying.
In terms of like overcoming self-doubt and trusting yourself. Yeah, you have an idea.
I don't know. I mean, I think self-doubt is a good thing, and like, especially if you're an artist, maybe even especially so if you're a writer. There's a lot of bad writing. There's a bunch of bad lyrics. Like people who tell me that, like, oh, I don't really care. Like musicians are like, I don't really care about the lyrics. Like, oh yeah, I just like write whatever. Like once the song's done, you know, whatever sounds good. To me, that's like just insane, because it's like, man, those are the lyrics. You know, those are what people kind of remember or hear. That's what's going to be associated with the song forever. So self doubt is good. You know, it's good to be your own worst critic. But also knowing when enough's enough. You know, you should be hard on yourself. I think anyone who creates anything should be hard on themselves and also critique themselves harshly. But, you know, you gotta trust yourself at the same time and realize when it's time to let go and be proud, or at least be happy with what you've created.
This might be an impossible question to answer, but I'm not a musician. What is that point where you know it, you're proud of it? What does that usually look like? How do you know that it's gotten to that point?
With live or with songs, I find that I don't really know when it's done until I've played it live. And sometimes you don't have that opportunity for whatever reason, if it's more of a recording project, or if you're just not going to play that type of song live, then that's not an option. But for the most part, with the bands that I've been in, I've had, like, you have the opportunity to play the song live before you record it. For some reason, playing it live, it just clicks, and it's kind of like, even if you had no idea where one line was going to go, or how the chorus was going to come in, or what have you, once you do it live, it's just kind of like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Like, and then it's just, it is that way. What's weird is like when you don't play a song live and you record it, and then months later you decide you want to add that song to the set, and you play it live and it doesn't sound like the recording. That's definitely happened. I don't know. And other times there are songs that you're like, okay, this one might not ever be done. You know, I might not ever be happy with this one, but everyone else is, so I'm going to let it go. And there are also, you know, songs that get played differently live over time. You come up with new things where it's like, damn, I wish I would have recorded it that way, because that sounds really cool.
Oh, that's what Ty Siegel's great at, that, right? I feel like he has several songs that are kind of the same song, but 6 minutes longer or a bit different.
Yeah, which is cool. Like when you get to the point where he's at, where people recognize just about every song he's playing, it's cool to do that, you know, and present it in a different way for like a revisited. Also, you know, like with somebody like him, he's introducing new members of his band occasionally. So, you know, when he adds like a keyboard player or something, you know, he can do different things with the song that he might not have done before. But yeah, he's totally a good example of that. I think White Fence is another band I've seen where, like, I've seen them play their songs live, like, completely different than the recordings, and it's pretty rad. I think any band that does that is cool, actually. That kind of goes back to what I was saying, like, they're not following the rules.
You can literally do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's art, right? Being able to kind of, you can remix your own art, and that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, that's rad. I think that's fun. And it's also kind of, like, can be a fun way to mess with the audience too.
Yeah, totally. So what's next for X-Cool, and what's your like vision for the future? What are your goals for the project?
I don't think X-Cool is slowing down. We've kind of always been on our own trajectory, and I don't think X-Cool has ever been like a buzz band. You know, we want the type of band to put out like one single and blow up, you know, have all these doors opened up for us. We've pretty much had to work for everything that we've gotten, which is cool, you know. I'm proud of that. We've worked hard when we get asked to play stuff like Desert Days. It's rad. You know, it's cool that a band from a place like Memphis, small town that, like, isn't known for producing bands that anyone gives a shit about anymore. It's cool. I like where X-Cult's at, and I like how we're kind of, like, slowly building it with playing festivals and, you know, having a successful European tour and shit like that. But happy with where we are. I'm just working on a new album, and then see what happens after that. I mean, it's definitely going to be on In the Red. I'm sure there will be more touring and more all the things that come with a new album cycle. But I don't know when that'll be yet. I can't give a release date or anything, but we're touring around Desert Days, and those will be the last shows of the year for X-Cult. Probably bunker down like we do every winter time and crank out some new material.
Is this your first time playing Desert Days?
I played last year with another band that I'm in. This is X-Cult's first time. Cool. So we're all stoked. I'm excited. We play Saturday night, and we have a good time slot on Saturday, so it should be cool.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen you live in X-Cult, so stoked to be able to check you guys out.
I'm excited.
I was listening to some of your music, I think the first album, on a run this morning. Perfect running music.
Oh, right. Yeah, the first one is getting up there in age. I think it came out in 2012. It's almost a classic.
Yeah. For Desert Days, are there any other bands on the bill that you're like super looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm excited to see Malcolm Mooney from Cannes. He's fucking rad. Ty and White Fence. They're only playing a few shows together, so that should be good. Who else? I don't know. The last year, the festival was just really fun, just to be, like, hanging at. I think My Boy Valentine would be cool. But, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm looking forward to jumping in the lake. That should be fun. But we're going to be on tour, so I'll only be there for a day.
Well, yeah, I saw that you're playing Bug Bar in Portland.
Yeah.
I don't think
we ever played there. We played a bunch of places in Portland, but I don't think we've ever played there. Sure, it'll be fun. Portland's fun. Seattle's always fun, too.
Cool. So what's the third band that you're in, other than Gogs and X-Cult?
I have a new project that has an EP coming out soon called Richard Rose, and it's like me and some guys from Texas that have all relocated to L.A., so it's kind of like a Southerners that have relocated to L.A. band. But those dudes play in other projects too, so it's kind of been slow getting off the ground. But we have some more stuff lined up to close out the year, and then 2019, I think Richard Rose will hit it a little harder.
Is that punk or punk leaning music as well?
Yeah, yeah, but it's got some more rock and roll stuff going on than any other band that I've done. It's got some Stooges worship happening.
Cool. And then, is there anything in particular you want to share about the Gogs album?
It drops this Friday. Yeah, it's out Friday, so go pick up a copy. Yeah, I'm super stoked on that record. It's been done for quite a long time, so I'm excited to share it with the rest of the world.
Before I ask you the three questions I ask everyone and wrap this up, what's it like for you switching between projects? Is that pretty streamlined for you, or is there any friction when you're jumping from project to project?
It's easy. I mean, I'm kind of used to it. Between Gogs and X-Cult, I think Gogs in 2016, I think Gogs and X-Cult had albums come out within a few months of each other. But I mean, it's really not that difficult because Gogs doesn't really play many shows. It's not like I'm jumping off one tour and going on another or something like that.
Right. That would be exhausting.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. And I'm good at like keeping a calendar. That's really all you have to do. When you're working around so many other people's schedules, you kind of figure out what you can and can't do pretty far in advance. So it's not as sporadic as it might seem. It's actually pretty well planned out.
Nice. Cool. Well, the three questions I ask everyone. First is, what does the word process mean to you?
The word process?
Yeah.
The way things get done, getting things done, taking care of business.
What's a piece of advice that, we already covered this a little bit with like emerging musicians, at least about record labels, but in general, what's a piece of advice that you would give to a musician today?
Always stay humble. I think the most annoying types of people are those that brag and boast about what they've done in their career or what they've done musically. And I think most of the time, you'll find that the people who are the most successful are normally the most humble and quiet about their accomplishments, and sometimes the most down-to-earth, and the people who are the loudest and always putting it in other people's faces what they've accomplished are normally the people who are trying too hard. It's good to stay humble and be nice in any situation in life, but especially in the music industry.
Totally. Do you feel that this is a bonus question. Do you feel that the music industry gets a bad rap, or do you feel that it's the general perception that there's a lot of jerks and manipulators and people out there to exploiting other people is generally true?
Yeah, that's 100% true. I feel like the trick is finding the right people to work with, finding the people that don't suck and that don't just want something out of you or something from you. That's a hard lesson to learn. Yeah, I think it's definitely true. I think people definitely get taken advantage of, whether they're because they're naive or because they want something so bad that they're not really looking at it clearly or what have you. So I think the trick is finding people that you trust and that you want to work with and that have your best interest in mind, not necessarily just what will sell records or work well for them. And that's tricky, I think, you know, no matter what scale or what level of success you've experienced, I think that that's true for all levels of doing this shit, finding the right people to work with, because there's a lot of idiots, people who waste your time.
Yeah. Any telltale signs? I feel like everyone probably says what they think you want to hear at first, or at least has what someone who's going to manipulate you does. Any telltale signs of the people who authentically have your best interests in mind and the people who don't?
I guess someone who actually knows your music. I've had people approach about X-Cult or approach me about other bands, and it's like pretty obvious that they don't even like the music, or that they don't, you know, it's good if they're a fan and actually like what you're doing. It's funny, that sounds so obvious, but a lot of people that I've met in the music industry, it's kind of like, do you even like this type of shit? You don't really seem like you would. It seems like you just kind of see an opportunity here. Someone who's genuine and not, you know, it's like anything else. If it sounds too good to be true, it normally is. If someone's going to keep it real with you and give you, you know, reasonable, like, feedback of what they think they could do for your band or your project, you know, that's a good thing. But obviously, if someone's promising you the moon, promising you something that you've never had in your music career up until this point, it's probably not going to happen for you. But also, I mean, you know, playing music to me shouldn't just be the business side of things. It's not to me at all. I mean, you know, people who are just concerned about how far the record's going to go or getting a manager that's going to push them in a certain direction, you know, that's not what it should be about. It's not what it's about to me. The fact that anyone even cares about the music that we create is a privilege and is fucking cool, you know, something I don't take for granted. I'm not in the music scene or the music industry to play big festivals or to sell out shows or anything like that. But when it happens, it's obviously cool and it's a benefit of hard work, but it's not the main goal. I think anyone that has the main goal of making it and getting big and getting famous is normally a douchebag.
Yeah. I feel like this is a stupid question, but it sounds like you're happier having other jobs that support you and being able to make music and art that you believe in and enjoy than trying to, like, maybe, you know, have a couple tracks on an album that are, like, going to have some more mass appeal but and that you don't exactly love in order to try to, like, make it as a musician and have that be your full-time career. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, music is a job for me. I mean, and it has been for a few years now, but it's a creative outlet. It's like one of the most writing and making music can be one of the most authentic and pure forms of creativity if you don't fuck it up with all the other stuff along the way. So that's important to me, to keep things as pure and unfiltered, unaffected as possible, because then it is just a pure, 100% real creative art form, and whatever comes from that, whatever success and whatever you want to call it comes from that, you can be happy with, because you knew that it was 100% real and genuine and you weren't creating it for any type of preconceived audience or preconceived situation. It's just some real shit that you created, and then whatever comes from it comes from it. That's like the school I come from. Make something real, make something that you can believe in, and then whatever success comes from it is, you know, a bonus at that point. You know, that's how I've always looked at any of my projects. Does it represent me as an artist, as a person? Am I happy with it? And if I can answer yes to those questions, then I don't really give a shit about what success or what accolades or whatever the hell you want to call it. You know, it's like I said, the product of a good album, something you can live with, that'll all come on its own. You know, that's how I try to keep all that in mind.
Yeah, you know, I have a ton of respect for you for also sharing it with the world, because your music's so, I mean, I know all music's personal, but for creating something that's authentically you and close to your heart and then sharing it, I know that can be a scary thing for a lot of people. Yeah, I had respect for doing it and putting it out there.
Yeah, cool. Well, thanks.
Last quick question. What's something that you're excited about today?
Today, I'm going to go jump in the ocean for the, I think it'll be the seventh day in a row. I'm pretty stoked on that. I'm easy to please. So the ocean, sunshine, really all I need today. So I'm stoked for that.
Yeah, sounds perfect. Cool. Well, thanks, Chris, so much for your time. This is great.